When you're buying seafood at the supermarket, you might check to see the country it comes from and whether the fish was wild-caught or farmed, or if it's fresh or frozen. But according to a recent year-long investigation by a team of Associated Press reporters, there's an additional category that's harder to check for. They have reported that fish harvested by slaves in Southeast Asia can end up in the shelves of some of America's largest grocery store chains, served in our restaurants, and included even in our pet food. Here to talk about the report and its aftermath is Associated Press national writer Martha Mendoza. I'm pleased to welcome her to our show. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. How did you and your fellow reporters even find out about this situation in Benjina, Indonesia?
A labor rights activist told us about horrifying stories coming from Benjina and showed a picture on her phone to one of my colleagues of their so-called jail, which is on a dock of the only fishing operator there. And she said she was planning a trip and invited us to join. So even before our team arrived there, they knew roughly what they would find. They had dug up everything we could on the company there on this in this community of Benjina. There's just one fishing company, and we had interviewed recent escapees on other islands, and they'd even seen like this grainy snapshot of what came to be a cage. However, what came as a complete shock when they got there was the level of desperation.
And the former slaves, you couldn't speak to any of the real slaves. The former slaves were very happy to speak with you?
Well, we had, and others had, interviewed former slaves in the past. What happened was when we went to Benjina, the enslaved men realized that the AP team was journalists, and they started pouring out their stories. We had one of our reporters is a Burmese woman who they could speak to, and they were eager to get messages to families that they were alive. Many wrote down the names of their parents and their Burmese addresses. They were pushing these crumpled pieces of paper into their hands. They came running out to talk about abuses they'd experienced on the boats and asking questions about life back in Burma. And they even banged on the door of a guest house where some AP reporters were staying, and they were holding bags stuffed with their belongings and asking if they could take them with them on the Dawn Ferry.
Where is Benjina? Isn't it kind of unreachable during monsoon season because it's so isolated?
It's part of the Maluku chain in Indonesia's. It's formerly known as the Spice Islands. The area is about 400 miles north of Australia, and it's a town of about 3,500 people. It straddles two small islands. It's separated by a five-minute boat ride. And to get there, yes, you first take a small plane to a small island, and then you take a ferry or hire a boat to get out there.
The report describes an intricate web of connections that obscures the fact that we might be eating slave-caught seafood. Can you describe that web?
Yeah. So as I said, the slavery and these brutal labor conditions in the Thai seafood industry, they've been documented before, and we were really baffled at the lack of outrage, and we were determined to find a way to make people care. So we decided we had to link the fish to the consumer. And we were told it was nearly impossible to go from fishing boat to dinner table. One expert said, you know, you're going after the holy grail. But AP from the top down provided the resources and the support. Our editor, Mary Rajkumar, was super determined. And Robin McDowell, Margie Mason, and I are longtime reporters. And when we go after something, we just don't stop till we get it. And so we just, let me explain what we did technically. We tracked the slave-caught fish, a big reefer cargo of it, by satellite because it had a beacon. And we could follow that beacon on our computers to the Thai port of Samut Sakhon, which is about an hour south of Bangkok.
So it was sent from Indonesia to Thailand?
Exactly, on just one big boat. And that journey took 2 weeks. And we could see on the satellite tracker when it came in to port. And so a group of AP journalists met the ship at port and spent the next 4 nights following truckloads of that seafood on to processors, distributors, and cold storage in that port town. So about 150 trucks offloaded the seafood from that single reefer and went to all these different processors and distributors. And then I began plugging away at databases that track U.S. imports. You know, surely one of these firms in Thailand that truckload had gone to shipped directly to the United States. We struck out a lot. We followed a lot of false leads. And there was days and weeks where we wondered if we were going to make a connection. In the U.S., I went to a lot of supermarkets to check out their frozen and canned fish. You know, was it from Thailand, as you were saying at the beginning? Was it a species we had seen these men hauling in? And what brand was it at the U.S. supermarket? Who was the distributor? And then I go back to databases for a potential match.
So it was relabeled? It was relabeled when it was sent to American supermarkets?
Exactly. Or it can simply show up at a U.S. supermarket with a store brand, you know, with plastic wrap and just the store brand and the price and the type of seafood. So no brand at all. The main reason it was so difficult to make these connections was because the Thai seafood export industry is really complex, and there's complicity in this at all levels. Relationships between companies there have much less to do with good business sense as with long-term friendships and familial ties. So even when we had followed trust directly to companies and mom-and-pop shops, it took us months to figure out who these companies were and who was buying from them. Documents in Thailand are routinely altered or completely falsified. And so even if a U.S. company thinks it's buying a fine, clean supply chain fish, it's probably changed hands a dozen times, and the papers don't reflect that.
But the company that's running the fishing operation in Indonesia is a Thai company?
It's a good question. The ownership of that company is still a murky question, both for us and for Thai authorities and Indonesian authorities. It's something we're looking into. But just to be clear, on the face of it, the Indonesian company, Pusaka Benjina Resources, would sell a big shipload to the Silver Sea Line, which was the big reefer cargo ship. And so then that Silver Sea Line, a Thai company, now owned it, all that fish, and would bring it into Thailand and then sell it to all the other companies in Thailand.
A Thai delegation visited the area, the slavery. Wasn't their report of what was going on kind of different than what you found and what the Indonesian officials found later?
Yeah, so after our first story came out saying, you know, tainted fish can wind up in the supply chains of some of America's biggest food sellers like Walmart, Cisco, or Kroger, and into popular brands, and we, you know, went back to, and we tied the whole thing back to Thailand. After we did the story, officials from Thailand went to visit Benjina. They were focused on finding Thai nationals who had been trafficked, and what they said was that nobody had been mistreated on any boats, and that the crews, they said they had examined the boats and the crews, and the result is most of the crews are happy. And so generally they said the boat conditions are good. The next day, an Indonesian fact-finding team came and found a deplorable situation with men describing horrible conditions. And then they took them, they rescued them. So hundreds of these men were rescued in a very dramatic day at Benjina.
A runaway slave named Lang Min told an AP reporter, "If Americans and Europeans are eating this fish, they should remember us. There must be a mountain of bones under the sea. The bones of the people could be an island. It's that many." These are the bones of people who've been slaves?
Yeah. So these men describe captains on their fishing boats forcing them to drink unclean water. They describe working 20 to 22-hour shifts with no days off. Almost all said they were kicked and whipped with toxic stingray tails or otherwise beaten if they complained or tried to rest. They were paid little or nothing as they hauled in these big nets of fish. And in the worst cases, numerous men reported maimings or even death on the boats.
And then their bodies were just tossed into the sea? Often under false names?
Initially, that was what had happened, but back on the island, authorities were wondering why more people were going out than coming back. And so the slaves told us that the bodies would be put into the same cold storage as the seafood and brought back to shore. And my colleagues saw on Benjina a graveyard with false Thai names attached to the graves of dozens and dozens of men.
My guest is Martha Mendoza, part of a team of Associated Press reporters who have reported on slavery in seafood. What kind of seafood are we talking about? If I go to the supermarket, are there certain fish that are more likely to have come out of this situation?
The types of fish that we saw them catching were squid, shrimp, snapper, grouper. There was some tuna in there, although this is not a tuna fishery. It was quite a wide variety. And so at this point, identifying which exact fish came from these slaves is tough. What we could do was point to the supply chain, and that supply chain was, as I mentioned, some of the biggest food sellers like Walmart, Cisco, Kroger, also Albertsons, and Safeway carry some seafood from the supply chain, and it just ends up under a private label, so you wouldn't see it tied back. There was canned pet food labels that we found at, coming out of some of these factories, Fancy Feast, Meowmix, and Iams. And then, as I say, even restaurants which are trying hard not to have, fish with this type of labor in its supply chain, even some of them can inadvertently end up with it.
The Indonesian officials offered immediate evacuation to the first group of slaves they found, but the evacuation was soon opened up to everyone. How many people came forward?
Well, more than 300. So what happened was the Indonesian officials went to Benjina and they began interviewing people. You know, what happened? What has your situation been? A couple men. And they, at the end of that interview, said, your situation is so bad that we can't even let you stay here. And they said, good, because we might be harmed for talking to you. And so they went and they were getting their stuff. And more people heard, they're taking you off the island. You know, we want to go too. And soon more and more people began running out of the jungles, jumping out of the boats, just piling down to the docks. They were stuffing their belongings into plastic bags and just rushing back to the dock. They didn't want to be left behind. And the Indonesian delegation said, you know what, we're going to take anyone who wants to go. And they commandeered seven fishing trawlers, and they loaded everybody up, and they took them to another island, Tual, where they're now being interviewed one at a time and processed and trying to get them back to Myanmar, which means bringing officials from Myanmar there to help them with their documentation.
Were all of the slaves men?
That's a great question. Yeah, they were. And I should note that the timing of this, because of the timing of this, when our story went, we depicted and interviewed several, about eight men. And so we knew before we published that they would be harmed or could be harmed as a result of having spoken to us. So we worked with the International Organization of Migration to get them out before we published. So there was an initial small group of eight men who were rescued prior to our publication.
Why are they all from Myanmar? How do they wind up in Benjina? Well, where are they from?
Okay. Yeah, there's some from Cambodia and other countries, Laos, but they are largely from Myanmar. And the way this happens is first of all, let me step back. The story of slavery in the Thai seafood industry starts decades ago, and it's the same push and pull that shapes economic immigration worldwide, this hope of escaping grinding poverty to find a better life somewhere else. In recent years, as the Thai export business has boomed, it's become more difficult to convince young Burmese or Cambodian migrants and impoverished Thais, all of whom were found on Benjina, to accept dangerous jobs. And so agents have been actually recruiting even children and disabled. They lie about wages. They at times have drugged or kidnapped migrants. And then brokers get control of them and sell them, usually to Thai captains of fishing boats or companies that own them.
And are they ever paid? About 50 of the 320 liberated men refused to go because they said they hadn't received their salaries and didn't want to leave before they were paid.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sometimes they are paid small amounts. The pay can be a packet of noodles. It can be some dollars. But it's minimal. And under the definition of modern slavery, anybody who's forced to work, period, is considered a trafficked individual or a forced laborer.
How long had they been enslaved on the whole? I mean, were there people who'd been there years?
Yeah, there were people who had been there for years. Right now, there's a careful interview process going on with these hundreds of men. We heard, a couple years to even like 8 years, where they had not been in touch with their families.
In one of the AP articles, a freed slave said four of his front teeth were missing because they'd been kicked in by a captain when he wasn't moving fast enough. What happened to people who objected to their treatment?
Well, it depended on where they were, but they typically described being really, really beaten up and their lives were threatened.
Weren't they also put in cages?
So when they came into Benjina from being out on the trawlers, yeah, they could be locked in a cage on the island. Also, if they were considered a flight risk when they were on the island, if it was thought that they might try to run away, then instead they would lock them in this cage.
Is this situation unique to Benjina? Could it be happening
No.
in other places?
Yeah. So there's actually estimated thousands of people who are being trafficked in Southeast Asia. And so there, you know, the governments can take action and pledge to do so time and again, but so can industry. The U.S. seafood industry suspects slave labor is used to catch fish bought from Thailand, enough to have been supporting some programs there to end it. And after our story came out, which really provided indisputable evidence to what they had long suspected, they wrote a few letters and made some strong statements. It still doesn't constitute change. We linked our load of seafood to two big exporters in Thailand, Thai Union and Kingfisher, but the way the system is set up, it's just almost impossible that any exporter is completely clean at this point. And as I say, the State Department and those governments all say that they're trying to address this.
The United States has gotten involved. After all, Thailand is one of our top seafood suppliers, and the United States has very good relations with Thailand.
Yeah. So last year, the United States added Thailand to a blacklist of countries for its human rights record when it comes to trafficking in persons. It did not, however, issue any financial sanctions. As you note, they're a close ally. The State Department, since our reporting has come out, has said we are concerned and, you know, we want the Thai government to address this. We've heard that before.
Now, has anything changed as a result?
The most dramatic change is that these men are no longer stuck on Benjina.
Yeah, but these are just a small percentage of the men who probably have been kept as slaves.
Correct. And for decades now, it's been documented. Certainly going back 10 years, it's been well documented that there is forced labor and slavery in this industry. There's been other media reports. What they haven't done as explicitly is track that supply chain. No, I don't see any fundamental changes going on.
The International Organization for Migration said there could be as many as 4,000 foreign men stranded on islands near Benjina following a fishing moratorium called by the Indonesian Fisheries Ministry to crack down on poaching, not slavery.
So the Indonesian Fishing Ministry is trying to crack down on other countries' trawlers fishing out of its waters. You know, that's an Indonesian resource, that seafood, and they don't want it being profited on by other countries. And also they're trying to maintain fisheries. They don't want fisheries to be completely depleted. So what they've done is told everybody come into shore, and if we're for a few months, and if we see a boat out, we're going to examine it and find out who they are. And if they are not a legitimate Indonesian fishing boat or they don't have the right paperwork, they risk being blown up literally at sea. And so therefore, a whole lot of fishing has been halted in Indonesia. These boats have come to shore, and the reality of the labor conditions and the men who are being forced to work on these boats is becoming more evident.
Has the Indonesian government been a good player in this story?
There's a relatively new Indonesian government, and they have been very strong on this, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was it gratifying to know that a story that you and your team broke has had real consequences?
Can you imagine what it was like? I mean, it was unbelievable to have these hundreds of men. If you have a chance, take a look at the photos or video online. They're just smiling. They're full of hope. And as I said earlier, they were so desperate. They were just so depressed when we first went there and met them. And so to have them be freed, that's unbelievable.
We have posted links to some of the articles on our show page at WNYC.org. What kind of physical condition were these men in when they were rescued? Were they emaciated?
Yeah, they're hungry. They've been beat up. Some are very sick. Others are simply hungry. And in the prior rescues, also very, very sick men have been taken ashore.
You mentioned these American grocery chains and the like, Kroger, Walmart, Safeway, Sysco, which supplies a lot of restaurants with ingredients, Fancy Feast and other pet food companies. What's their reaction been to the story?
Well, they all said they strongly condemn labor abuse. They issued statements, and they all said they're taking steps to prevent it. They work with human rights groups. They try to, you know, have audits, third-party audits overseas. So they already suspected this enough and had enough information to already have these systems in place. Those systems clearly were not good enough to prevent slave labor from entering their supply chains.
And if I, as a consumer, don't want to buy fish that was caught by slave labor, is there any way I can even know?
I'm going to ask you to stand by on that one. We're not at all done with our journalism here. And so at this point, what we can do is point to companies where it is in their supply chains, actual businesses, actually getting fish on, you know, fish, which particular fish or which particular brand in the stores. We're still working on it.
Well, we are encouraged to buy local when it comes to produce. Would that be the best policy when we're buying seafood?
Yep, and you pay a premium for knowing that this is a not only a fish that was caught using decent labor conditions, but also a fish that was caught in a way that is going to sustain the fishery and in a way that is, you know, not an illegal take from someone else's water. The U.S. fisheries are pretty well managed. And so, yeah, you absolutely can do that. The other day I was trying to buy some fish for my husband, and I went to the local fish stand and I got halibut that was locally caught off the California coast. And I paid $40 for 2 pounds, which is the actual real price for everybody in that chain to be able to make a living at it.
And what would it cost if you were buying the halibut that had been caught by slaves?
Well, I can't say that halibut was caught by slaves, but I can tell you 2 pounds
comparable
of a similar fish. Yeah. It could be, you know, $5 or $6 at a supermarket.
And that's despite the fact that it also has to be shipped to this country.
Correct. I mean, seafood shipping is much cheaper than paying somebody a decent wage and taking care of the environment at the same process.
So would that be one of the alarm bells, the fact that it was inexpensive, that it came from Thailand, that it's probably arriving frozen?
You know, it can be, but what if there's a really good player in Thailand who's trying to do this right and barely making a living at it, and so, you know, the fish companies say we don't want to cut them off because these are very poor people who are making a go at it, and so we want to, you know, find the right players and push the ones who are doing things wrong to do better with our financial push and pull that we have over them.
Martha Mendoza I have to end it there, Martha, unfortunately.
Yeah, go ahead.
But we have a link to some of the articles, Slavery in Seafood, from the Associated Press. Thank you so much for being on our show.